is the Next Trip Podcast with aviation insiders Doug and Drew. Together, with more than 40 years of industry experience, they are creating a network for other av geeks and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. All thoughts and opinions are their own.
Good day and welcome to Boarding Pass 108, operating on December 20th. This is Drew and I'm here with my fellow industry insider, Doug. We're two av geeks creating a network for airline, airplane, airport, and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. Doug, it's only 5 days until Christmas. Did you get everything you needed? Any supply chain issues?
Drew, I was laughing when I read this because we're actually recording and it's 9 days prior to Christmas, mm-hmm. I think. No, I'm not done. I have a couple of things that Marissa asked for. I actually should probably be quiet so she doesn't hear me. I have a couple of things that she asked for that I've been refreshing the screen daily, and it says in stock. It won't be here by Christmas, but I want to order it, at least print out the picture and show it to her and say, look at this cool thing that you asked for that I'm getting you that's stuck on a boat somewhere.
Yeah. So I'm going to see my nephews the week after Christmas.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to overthink this. I'm going to get there. I'm going to take them to a toy store.
Yeah, and just let them pick out.
What do you want?
yeah, there's no supply chain issue when it's on the shelf and you can pick it out and walk out with it. Yeah.
Just don't ever do what Robbie did, like when we first started going out. Like, he's horrible at events. He's really good at other things, but events, he's horrible. And Christmas was a huge thing for my family, right? It was a big event all the time. And I remember he slacked, didn't get me anything. And what I got was like a crumpled little note next to the tree that it was an IOU for some floor mats for my car. I just wanted to cry. You've had a crazy week. I haven't even been able to keep track.
Yeah, I can't
you probably
either.
Haven't been able.
No, I after I dropped Poppy off at school this morning, I was driving back thinking about the podcast and I was like, I'm gonna have to talk through where I was and what I did. And I was trying to remember it. See, I left for Seattle on Saturday, which is 6 days ago now. That seems like a lifetime ago. I did a Seattle turn, and then I was supposed to do a red eye to Cleveland, which canceled because of weather in San Francisco. Ended up on a red eye deadhead to Chicago with a day over in Chicago, and then we flipped to Minneapolis, and then I ended up in Newark and Orlando and Houston, and then back to San Francisco over like a 5 day period. it was a whirlwind. Great captain that I flew with, but it was actually really fun, Drew, because I saw my aunt in Chicago, who's an American flight attendant. I've got a story that we'll talk about here in a little bit. And then that same night, I ended up in Minneapolis and stayed with one of my pilot training buddies. Instead of going to the crew hotel, just stayed at his house. We had some beers. I woke up in the morning. They had breakfast fixed for me. It felt like being at a family event while on the road.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you're able to, because you have family and friends all over the country, so you can coordinate that with your trip sometimes.
Yeah. And Marissa and I are really good friends with TJ and his wife and their kids, and our kids have spent time with their kids. So it felt like I was at a family event while I was on a work trip. So that was really cool.
Now, you were also in Minneapolis. How weird was that, flying into Minneapolis, which is your hometown?
I was thinking about that because the first commercial flight, actually the first flight in general that I ever did in my life was from Minneapolis. And that was the airport that I flew through 99% of the time until I was 18, 19, 20 years old growing up. It was really cool flying in there for the first time up front and operating into that airport. And then we delayed out of there like an hour because the inbound flight was late. And I went to my favorite spot. The club is probably my favorite spot, but I couldn't do that because I was working. I went to the observation deck and sat up there with a coffee, and
I don't think you sent me pictures from that. I didn't even know they had an observation deck.
No, I sent it to the group. That was where I said that I was in the lion's den.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The lion's den.
Yeah. So I sat up there for an hour and drew my, I grew up. My dad took me there all the time. Every time we would fly through Minneapolis, and sitting there in uniform just was a very special experience for me. It reminded me of what Steve said last week about taking off out of Los Angeles on the 747. It was like this, the stars aligned for that. And I felt kind of the same way.
To Steve and Matt, if you're listening, that our episode did really well last week with the two of them on.
Yeah.
You know, and it was so weird because I thought we were just talking. I think we just threw away the script and we were just talking about planes and their careers at their companies.
Yeah, we just let the conversation flow.
Yeah, I was kind of embarrassed because I said something. Hey, you know, I never thought cargo pilots were something to the effect that
so
I just thought they were boring.
And it turned out to be our longest episode.
I know, right? 120, 1 hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah. You got away.
I had to get away because I had a very difficult week, which I talked about in the last episode, working AM shifts because one of my coworkers is on vacation. So not just AM shifts, but working the AM shift and my PM shift.
Normal shift.
Yeah, I had to get away. I went to Las Vegas for 2 days, which is a great getaway place. And for people who are listening, if you want good deals, go to Las Vegas midweek.
Yeah.
Less crowds. Everything's really cheap. And one of our listeners, Ian, who's a friend now, he drove up from LA. So it was an awesome time. And it was another coincidence was one of his friends, RT, if you're listening, shout out. He listens to our podcast. He's from West Hollywood, and he's also a film or TV producer. So he drove up. But it is so weird. So both of these guys are jet setters, right? They're young. They're upwardly mobile. And all the talk was about which one of their friends made Million Miler and how many miles they have. And I'm interested in that, right? Because I'm an av geek and I also love these perks. But it turns out, you know, the guy has a great career. We didn't talk about how cool his job is. He was more excited to tell me, you know, how he was doing on Delta.
Jet setting, yeah.
Then Ian, just out of the blue, comes up out with this term, which I wrote down for us, Doug. He's a member of all three alliances, right? He flies all three of those major carriers in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Star Alliance, One World, and
Sky Team. Yeah.
He said, yeah, it's like, you know, I'm a member of, I guess, the Holy Trinity. So Holy Trinity. So I wrote that down.
Well, I take issue with Ian. He's Mr. Jet Setter, and he drove up from Los Angeles. It's a 45-minute flight, and there are flights every 20 minutes.
Right. And I asked him, I said, Ian, why don't you just fly up? It's like 5,000 miles because it's midweek, right? It's dirt cheap to even fly.
Yeah.
And he said, no, he's looking forward to driving. He's been flying so much. He just wants the freedom drive. Yeah. Yeah, he said it was actually very, very therapeutic to sit in the car for 3 hours and just be in control and just relax and not think about going through security and all that.
I've done that drive. It's very mind-numbing.
It is. Yeah, I've done it too.
Yeah, from Los Angeles to Las Vegas.
Yeah. I was telling him how you saw taillights all lined up.
All through the
desert.
You must
have been flying during the weekend because he had no traffic.
Well, it wasn't just the weekend. It was the Sunday of Thanksgiving, the Sunday night of Thanksgiving, which was the busiest travel day of the year, but both on the roads and in the airport.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna come back to my trip because we're going to talk about some deals and give our listeners some advice and some tips on what they can do. So we'll come back to that. Doug, I want to give a shout out to American. So one of our close friends who's on our little chat, he flew American, non-revved on American to Europe and back. Listen to this, hot towels and sundaes.
Yeah, they're back.
They're back. So I think things are turning as long as Omicron doesn't shut all that down. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, and I, on my Deadhead flight to Chicago, I don't think I told you this, I had a meal option. It was an overnight flight. It was a midnight departure, 3-hour flight, and I could have had a hot meal if I wanted. Of course, it was the chicken orzo, so I turned it down.
And the other choice was some
lasagna type pasta, which I've had both of those a lot recently. And I was like, no, I'd just rather sit here and watch my show, but still. Yeah.
So is that also a turning point that things are back to normal if Doug is, or I, if we're turning away airline food?
Yeah, very, very true.
Mm-hmm.
That's very true. Well, before we move on, I just real quickly want to explain this passport story about my aunt. It's actually not about my aunt. It's my cousin, her son and daughter. He was supposed to go to South Africa with his dad back in June, and they hadn't traveled internationally first of all, she works for an airline. She's a flight attendant, and they have travel benefits. And he was supposed to go to South Africa with his dad to visit some family friends. and like 4 days before they were supposed to go, realized that his passport was expired, that my cousin's passport was expired. They're an aviation family, so what did they do? Well, first of all, they looked for passport appointments in the Chicago area.
Okay.
Everything was completely booked for weeks, months in advance. My cousin, his sister, was the one who suggested, why don't you just look somewhere in the U.S. and see what's available and see what's open? Yeah. My aunt and uncle found an appointment the next day, or no, 2 days later in New Orleans.
Okay.
That they could do a 24-hour expedited service that would get him his passport the morning or the afternoon before his flight to South Africa.
Oh my
so
God.
So what did they do? Both of my cousins, my cousin Trent, my cousin Paige, flew down to New Orleans, spent a night in New Orleans on the town, went to the passport appointment the next day, got the passport the day later, and he went to South Africa. That's what we do in the industry. We make a bad situation into something fun. Like, hey, yeah. I don't want to wait a month for my passport and miss this trip. Let's find a place that they have it. And they would have gone to pick any little podunk town to get it. It just happened to be a fun place in New Orleans. But I was just laughing the whole time because I was like, that's something that we would do.
And a lot of
people that we know in the industry with the travel benefits would do too.
Yeah. I mean, they just made a stressful situation into something fun. Doug, this week, I wanted you to hold off on telling the listeners about this because this goes right into our first topic. This week, you must have been on a roller coaster because in terms of sleep patterns, you were all over the map, literally. You did a red-eye deadhead flight. I think we've explained deadhead. Do you want to explain that to the listeners what deadhead is?
Yeah, I think we have, but that's where, like I mentioned, my flight to Cleveland canceled and they had to get me to Chicago to pick up the trip where it would have left off because we were supposed to do then Cleveland to Chicago. The deadhead is where we sit in the back. We have a booked passenger seat where it's not non-rev, it's not jump seating. I actually had to check in. I had a PNR. I had a confirmed seat in the back. Airlines do this all the time, Drew, to shuffle crews and people and workers all over the place to be in position to then pick up the trip.
Yep. So you had that deadhead flight from SFO to Chicago, and then you had what you just mentioned this earlier, you called it a day over. Even I had never heard of that. So that's when you lay over, but it's not overnight. It's because you flew overnight, so you're sleeping during the day.
Yeah. That's a day over. We got in at 6 o'clock in the morning, had the hotel for 10 hours, and then had to be back at the airport at 6 o'clock for a 7 o'clock flight that night.
Yeah, I can't imagine. You had the day over there and then another night flight after that. Doug, you were working when most people were sleeping. I talked about my crazy week on the last episode about not seeing natural light for a couple days because I was going in at night, leaving at night. I think most of our non-aviation listeners think we have this charmed life, right? Where we have our dream jobs, but it's not always a walk in the park, Doug.
No, it's funny because you mentioned you're an airline employee when it's dark when you go to work and dark when you come home. Our flight from Minneapolis to Chicago Minneapolis to Newark, we landed at night, but we took off and it was light out. And my captain made a comment to me about how he hadn't flown during the day in like a month or something like that, because he had just been doing a lot of night flying, not necessarily overnight, but this time of year when it gets dark at 4 o'clock, 4:30 in the afternoon, it's a lot of evening flying. And he said, it's kind of nice to get that vitamin D right now, even though it only lasted about an hour. And then basically the rest of our flying was nighttime. But talking about those layovers, yeah, you're totally right. If I told people that I was going to Minneapolis, which it's December, a lot of people probably wouldn't think that was a great layover. So I'll skip that one. But I had an Orlando layover, and this weekend I'm going to both Fort Lauderdale and Miami, and it sounds great, and it is. Right. I mean, it really is a great layover. But the problem is, at all those places, I get in at midnight. All the bars, all the restaurants, everything are closed, which means I have to get food at the airport at the place that I'm leaving. When I get in, I then go to bed, sleep 8, 9, 10 hours. Probably more because I'm tired. I wake up, get a quick workout in, get a bite to eat, and then I'm back at the airport.
Yeah.
So very quickly, a 15-hour layover in a great city like that, because I have to get crew rest and I can't just go out on the town all night, turns into just sleeping in the hotel, grabbing food right near the hotel, and then heading back to the airport.
I guess the good thing is you're on a schedule now because you were on reserve, mm-hmm. right? But now the schedules you're getting are less desirable ones. Is that why you're, is that not desirable to get these overnight trips or day over trips?
It's not bad if you do it once a month or once every couple months, but because I'm the bottom of the line holders right now, the most junior of the people who have a line, I can't complain. Mm-hmm. It may sound like I'm complaining. I'm not. I'm happy that I have a line because I don't have to sit on reserve and be on call and go sit at the airport and wait for someone not to show up. I know when I'm leaving home. I know when I'm getting home. That's awesome. As the months progress and I move up in seniority, I'll start to get better schedules where I can bid around those, saying I don't want red eyes, I don't mm-hmm. want day overs, I don't want things like that, and I'll end up getting better layovers and better schedules. Yeah.
Okay. And then for the listeners, I just want everyone to know Doug is doing this podcast after, what did you get, 4 hours of sleep last night after you got home?
4 broken hours of sleep because the dog had a couple accidents overnight and then I had to get up and get the kids ready and off to school.
Once again, charmed airline life. I want to give people some advice. So my schedule is all over the map, but I can tell you what helps me sleep and what helps me reset is a good workout. It's very hard for me to get to bed at 9:30 at night, which is early for me, to wake up at 4 a.m. to go to work. So what I'll do is when I work the morning shifts, as soon as I come home, it'll be like 4 p.m. Doug, I'll go for a workout. I will force myself. Mm-hmm. And I have, right, this week I like telling you because then it keeps me honest. Like if I tell Doug, that means there's more chance I'll do it, right? Have a good workout. 9:30 is too early for me to fall asleep, but I will because I'm tired from my workout. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'm tired, but I fall asleep very easily. So that's the advice I would give to airline employees. And I think you do that when you travel. You put in a workout someplace. You know,
I do. Yeah, it might be at weird times of the day, but you, like you said, Drew, you may not feel like you're tired, but in a way, you're forcing your body into recovery mode at that point. Yep. Mm-hmm. Because you're stressing your body, getting your heart rate up. If you're lifting, you're burning those muscles and they have to rebuild. And after 30 minutes, once your heart rate goes down, you'll actually start to feel tired. If you lay down, close your eyes, before you know it, you'll be asleep.
Yeah. Well, and there's other things, and I'm sure you're experiencing this. So, you know, when you travel, your diet is totally messed up because right? And you eat a lot of cheeseburger, you know, there's a lot of cheeseburgers, pizza, you know, because that's the stuff you crave. And then your body is confused because now it's in a different time zone. So it seems like your whole metabolism just slows down.
Mm-hmm.
And just like you were talking about getting the blood pressure up, that a workout can get things moving again. That's what I found. So I just got back from Vegas, you know, and I feel like a little gross because I've been eating all this really rich food and, you know, drinking a lot and having a good time. Today, 64 degrees, sunny in DC. I went for a nice jog in the sun, got my vitamin D, and I feel completely reset now.
Yeah. And that's something I try and do in every city that I'm in. Even if I've been there before, I try and go for a run because to me, I'll bring my phone along, get pictures. That's the way mm-hmm. that I can see the town. And if it's like in Orlando the other morning, I went for a quick run and basically scouted out a place that I was going to have lunch.
Yeah.
On my run, went back, showered, and then went out and walked to the place that I found on the run. Mm-hmm. It's a good way to get that exercise, keep your body in shape, mm-hmm. and find a place to go to.
Yeah. And you don't necessarily have to run. You could do a bike tour in a city, mm-hmm. or you could rent a bike, or you could just go for a brisk walk, you know, anything that gets everything moving.
Drew, we just talked about how we can make kind of a bad schedule positive. We're positive mm-hmm. on this podcast, and you and I both have a very positive attitude about aviation's future, and we're forward looking, but we're also realistic. We've seen all the stories recently about planes flying on sustainable fuel, electric VTOL air taxis, and regional planes that are running on battery power, mm-hmm. and the possible return of supersonic travel. Are we making any progress? What's the news this week?
Yeah, so we've been talking about this boom supersonic transport, Doug, in the last few episodes. And we just, you know, we think it's kind of a dream because we think it's so outlandish that, you know, this could actually happen. We're hopeful, but, you know, we're not, I wouldn't say we're pessimistic. I think we're pragmatic. I would mm-hmm. put it that way. This is from the News and Observer. It's a local paper. It's in Raleigh, North Carolina. Supersonic jet maker negotiating with North Carolina to build a manufacturing plant in Greensboro. Airport code GSO. It's hard to make up a name for that. Just so.
just Greensboro.
GISO?
GISO, yeah, maybe. Yeah, if you live there, if you're from Greensboro, GSO, let us know what you call it. Probably just Greensboro.
Oh, I called BWI BWI yesterday.
That's what I say.
No, I know that I got that from you because the airplane that we flew that we landed in San Francisco, we got a message saying it's a quick turn going to BWI, and the message popped up on ACARS, and I said to the captain, "Oh, it's a quick turn to BWI." And then I was like,
didn't flinch because that's what people call
it. Yeah, he didn't flinch. Yeah. Yeah. I digress. Sorry.
That's a good one, BWI. No, that etch that in stone. That's what we call it. Boom, the upstart airplane maker is in negotiations to secure a place with Greensboro's Piedmont Triad International Airport, or PTIA, for a new manufacturing facility where it plans to produce supersonic passenger jets. Legislation appropriating $106 million was approved to prepare 1,000 acres at the airport for a manufacturing plant that is expected to bring at least $500 million in investment and create at least 1,750 jobs. So, Doug, if this deal is completed, this six-year-old company, which hasn't made a plane that they've sold yet, by the way, it's called Boom Supersonic, will use the site to produce its new Overture jet. This is a 205-foot passenger plane that can travel at more than 1,300 miles per hour, faster than the speed of sound and twice the speed of today's fastest airliners. This plane can carry 65 to 88 passengers and fly as far as 4,800 miles at a cruising altitude of 60,000 feet. By the way, none of this is earth-shattering, right, Doug? Mm-hmm. The Concorde used to fly higher and faster with more people.
Yeah.
So this is definitely doable. If the agreement between North Carolina and the company is finalized, work on Boom's plant could begin in 2022, next year, Doug, 2022, with the first Overture rolling out in 2025 and flying in 2026. I can't even believe that seems very ambitious, and we'll follow this story. I hope it happens. The customers are Japan Airlines, United, and the U.S. Air Force.
The Air Force?
The U.S. Air Force.
Really? So, I didn't
know that.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they're probably, maybe they'll use it for Air Force One.
Some sort of VIP transport.
Yeah.
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 You mentioned JAL and United. When I was in Houston last night, there are Boom advertisements all over the place from United saying the future of aviation, of travel, is coming. For our Japanese listeners, let us know if JAL has ads too. I was thinking about that yesterday.
Yeah,
because if you think about it, United made this investment in an upstart company that they don't know if it's going to succeed or not.
Right.
This is almost like United marketing the airplane to the people to keep the dream alive. And if United wasn't pushing, saying we ordered or we put seed money into this, we ordered this airplane,
then
maybe it wouldn't come to fruition. But because United is making this big push, saying we pumped the money into it, we have the orders, if JAL is doing the same, maybe that gives them a greater chance of succeeding.
It's almost like they're willing it to reality.
To happen.
To happen, right? And you're raising a good point. And this is not in the script, but every United hub I've been to, I see those ads. And even if I'm a civilian or a business person or a stock market person, I'm going to remember that. And I'm wondering if that's helping investment in Boom, because United, I'm sure, well, of course, wants to be successful.
Maybe their business travelers see that and they're pumping some of that capital in as well. The venture capital.
Yeah, exactly. Now, we need to come back. So for the listeners, just to help everyone understand the problems with supersonic transport, it's not a walk in the park. There's a lot of challenges. So the Concorde was unsuccessful. And maybe, you may have more reasons why it was not successful, but generally it couldn't fly Transcon. There wasn't as much travel as there is now, Doug. So that was a hit to it. The FAA banned supersonic Transcon flights in 1973. Ticket prices were very expensive, so on average they were $13,000.
In 1970 money today, that would have been in the mid 20s probably, or 30,000.
So this Boom, the Overture, is more efficient. There's more efficient technology, and it's going to run on sustainable fuel substitutes. They're hoping that'll lower the operating costs, and their website is saying they're hoping to have the ticket prices similar to a business class ticket. So we'll see if that's doable. I can tell you right now, today, definitely several airlines have routes that this plane could work on.
Yeah. Anything that doesn't go over land. Now the problem that the Concorde faced was a flight from London to New York. And people don't realize this because they think that it's flying over the Atlantic. But if you look at the Great Circle route, which is what these airplanes take a globe, put a string on London, bring the string over to New York. It's only over the ocean for about 2000 miles, maybe a little bit less.
Yeah.
Which is about 60%, 50% of the flight, meaning 50% of a transatlantic flight is over land. A lot of that overland flight can't be supersonic. Now, flying over certain parts of Canada, there may not be inhabitants down there where they would be allowed to do it, et cetera.
Right.
And I think I read that boom might have they're hoping that the sonic boom, which is what happens when an airplane breaks the speed of sound, won't be as noticeable on the ground as it was with the Concorde. But Drew,
right.
The Concorde was way ahead of its time, unfortunately. It was a futuristic airplane built in the 1970s that there just wasn't the business travel and the money and aviation travel and things like that that really buoyed it. And production stopped relatively soon after it started. And it was kind of a niche market that Air France and British Airways then had until the early 2000s. But those airplanes, when they retired them, were 30 years old. They hadn't built one since the mid-70s, late 70s, right. I believe.
Well, yeah. And during that time, the Europeans were betting on speed, right? They were betting on speed, while the Americans were betting on size and volume. So it was basically the 747 versus the Concorde.
Yeah.
The 747 won because we were more concerned with price, the price of travel, right? And making it open to more people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the formula that won. But yeah. I think we're so far into it now. And we've talked about this before. To me, it is really disappointing that it takes the same amount of time. I'm 50 years old, 51. It's the same amount of time from when I was a kid to now to get to Europe.
Yeah.
Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah, it hasn't changed. Yeah. Well, it's great to see progress on a plane that may finally start reducing travel time again, almost 20 years since the Concorde last flew, and doing it sustainably. Speaking of sustainability, I hate to say it, here we go again with another vegan plane idea. Drew, let's get into some rapid-fire news items this week.
Before we leave that term vegan, because we're coining it, right? Vegan planes?
Yeah.
That actually came from one of our listeners. His name's Nolan. Hey, Nolan, shout out. Because he got tired of every day there's a tweet of some new, you know, sustainable fuel plane. But
yeah.
It does make sense, right? Because the vegan planes, they operate on like cooking oil. I guess they could operate on bacon grease, but vegan versus fossil fuel. So that does kind of make sense that it's vegan. All right, this first one, United plans to purchase up to 100 hydrogen electric engines. This is from CNBC. Under the deal, United said it expects to purchase up to 100 Zero Avia, that's the name of the company, and their engine is the ZA2000-RJ. This is an engine they described as zero emission and 100% hydrogen electric. The airline said the engine was expected to be used in pairs as a new power source for existing regional aircraft, such as the CRJ-700 by 2028. Thoughts?
Do you know what this makes me think of? Do you remember when McDonnell Douglas was developing I think it was the MD-95, which went on to become the 717. They had a very high bypass turboprop. High bypass. I don't even know what kind of engine to call it. It was a traditional high bypass turbofan engine, but it also was a turboprop on the outside, which was supposed to be more efficient. Never ended up catching on. But to me, this article makes me think of that.
Yeah. What I think is great about this is, you know, airlines, let's be honest, the bottom line is what's most important.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can have these CRJ-700s that you already own, instead of buying a new technology aircraft, if you could just slap new engines on them and all of a sudden they're much more efficient, how great is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When was this article from, though?
Oh, this article? This just came out. So this was when I was in Vegas. So I'd say a couple days ago.
Okay. The only reason I asked that is because United CEO Scott Kirby said yesterday that the airline is trying to get away from regional jets in the next few years. So I'm wondering how that is going to play into this, because this is supposed to be on a CRJ-700.
I think when they say that, they're mostly talking about your favorite plane, the CRJ-200, getting away from that regional jet.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a problem. I mean, this is a little bit of a tangent, but CRJ-200s are going to be here for a while, because some of these tiny markets cannot support more than 50 seats a day.
We're going to lose those tiny markets. Unless it's an essential air service route, I hate to say it. And there was an article that came out today, a tangent, that I believe it was United, maybe Delta. One of the airlines said that they've had to ground a whole bunch of regional jets because of the pilot shortage at the regionals now.
And it's a real problem. Because are these people going to the majors? Mm-hmm, I wonder what
they're going to the majors. Okay. Yeah. And ultimately, that's what did in a lot of the regional airlines pre-COVID. The ones that shut down pre-COVID was they just couldn't keep the pilots. And unless one of these little cities is an essential air service, which is the subsidized route that they have to fly, which Joey talked about when he was on the episode way back last year. Right. Unfortunately, in like Dubuque, where I grew up, they're going to lose their service because it's not efficient to fly those airplanes. They're not going to have the pilots to be able to do it. It's sad to say, but I think that's where things are heading, unfortunately.
Yeah, maybe we can come back to watch those routes that disappear and see if airlines launch a bus like United has about in Denver. Yeah, that goes to some of these, which I've heard good feedback about those. It's really high quality, and they get miles for it and stuff like that. So
yeah,
it's a good alternative.
Yeah. Next story is from Reuters. American Airlines is planning to hire 18,000 workers in 2022. On top of the thousands of new employees this year to cater to rebound in travel, CEO Doug Parker tells lawmakers Wednesday during a hearing about flight disruptions in recent months.
Yeah. So for the listeners, if you want to get into the airlines, this is the time. So update your resumes, look at all the websites, keep putting in for stuff, because it's a really good time to join.
Mm-hmm.
This next story is everywhere. The operator of Ghana's main international airport will fine airlines $3,500 for every passenger that they fly in who is not vaccinated against COVID-19 or who tests positive for the coronavirus upon arrival, it said on Monday. So this is Ghana, and their major airport is Accra, ACC. Mm-hmm. This, Doug, you know, airlines have, if you're checking in with whatever airline, so say it's Lufthansa, right? And they check you in at SFO and you get to Croatia, let's say, and you don't have the right documents for that, that airline gets fined thousands of dollars.
Yeah, it's on that airline.
It's on that airline. So what Ghana is doing is similar, but it's for COVID requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised. There's got to be more. I think this is the first one that I've seen that has outwardly said the airline will get fined if they don't have the right COVID documentation.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes me wonder. I should have looked into this a little bit more. I'm guessing Ghana probably has a vaccination requirement to get into the country, and people just haven't been abiding by it. And that's why they're starting to say, we'll put it on the airlines. We'll start charging the airlines. It's got to be.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. All right. This next one, Drew, this is that whiplash effect. Like if you listen back to the last two or three episodes, it's up and down and up and down. And this is why we tell listeners, just hang on. Don't get all wrapped up in the ups and downs, because it's going to be like this for probably years to come. This is from Reuters. Omicron sets back airline industry's recovery hopes. Japan has banned foreigners. The United States is requiring COVID-19 tests 24 hours before flying. It used to be 72. And travelers to Singapore must now be tested daily for 7 days after arrival. In Australia, fully vaccinated travelers to Sydney and Melbourne must now isolate at their home or a hotel for 72 hours after arrival. On a positive note, the British government will remove all 11 Southern African countries from its COVID-19 travel red list from Wednesday. And actually updated from this, Drew, today I saw they're removing all countries, not just Southern Africa.
Wow, because there's so much transmission within the UK, it doesn't matter anymore.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Initially, it was because of the community transmission of passengers coming from Southern Africa. And they're saying, you know, it's here. we're just going to open back up, which we've talked about that.
Yeah. So these are the, just like you said, the whiplash. Hopefully, you know, next week we'll be talking about Japan easing these restrictions again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because maybe it's probably already in Japan like it is here, the Omicron variant.
Oh, yeah. Well, one, going back to Australia, one good piece of this, unfortunately, it's not fun to sit in a hotel for 72 hours after arrival. But I believe that Australia, for the majority of the pandemic, was 14 days. And our Australian listeners, you can correct us if we're wrong. So the fact that it's only, and 72 hours still is not fun, but the fact that it's only 72 hours now and not the 14 days that it had been, that's a good sign. Yeah. Hopefully we can get that down. But at least for now, that's a marked improvement from the 14 days that it had been.
Yeah, we'll see where that goes. All right, some good news. Well, good news for Airbus, not for Boeing. Airbus this week, the last couple of days, they've had three orders from different airlines, and they're substantial. Mm-hmm. So Qantas ordered 40 A320neo family airplanes to replace their 737s. Mm-hmm. So they're replacing their narrow-body fleet, and they're going with Airbus. Just, I believe it was today, KLM Air France, 100 narrow bodies from Airbus. They're ordering like five Airbus A350 freighters. Singapore Airlines, another boost to the A350F. They just ordered seven. Doug, I mean, we keep talking about this. Boeing needs to come up with a new product that can compete with these. They're just losing orders left and right.
Yeah, I read something about that Air France KLM order, and people are saying KLM strayed away from Boeing after being such a Boeing loyalist for the last several years. But if you think about it, KLM, when they ordered the A330 back in the mid-2000s, people said the same thing. They said, well, KLM hasn't operated an Airbus since they had the A300 back in the late 80s, early 90s. Yeah. And Air France KLM is the same company. They're, I guess, it's same parent company. Technically, it's two separate companies. It's the same parent company. Look at Air France. The only Boeing that Air France operates now is the 78 and the 777. Narrow body fleet is A220s and A319s, 20s and 21s. They haven't flown 737s for years. Yeah. So the company itself, it's a loss to Boeing and a win for Airbus, but I don't think it's as big of a loss as what some people are making it out to be. Because ultimately the head of the parent company, they've been I don't want to say all in, but they've been pretty well in on Airbus for a while.
I don't know. KLM has a lot of Boeing.
Yeah, they 787. Yes, they do 787s, 777s, but they do have A330s, and Airbus, aside from some 78s and 777s, Air France is largely an Airbus operating airline, and it's the same parent company for both of them. The same parent company. I don't exactly know if KLM made the decision or if it came from the lead company CEO. I don't know who made that ultimate decision.
I'm beginning to think, like, what country they come from doesn't matter at all anymore.
Yeah.
And this is, it was so funny back in the 90s, when British Airways bought the 777 over the A340, the Europeans were up in arms, right?
Yeah.
And then for the engines, instead of Rolls-Royce, they went with the GE90 for their first 777s.
Yeah.
So I don't think it has very little to do with the country they're from. It's where whomever is offering them the best deal.
The best deal and what fits best in their fleet and what they want to do with it. Yeah. Well, I mean, we've talked about how people are up in arms about, like, Delta ordering a bunch of Airbus airplanes, but they're made in Mobile, Alabama. Like, it's a European
A220s
company. Well, the A321s now are made there too, I believe.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It's a European company, but it's 99, those particular airframes are 99% made in the US. It's such an interconnected global world.
It's such a tangent.
Yeah.
So you can buy a Toyota Camry that's probably made in the US. More than likely, your Toyota Camry is made in the US.
Mm-hmm.
If you bought, I think, one of those cars, the Chevy Cruze, or can't remember exactly which model
mostly
it was.
Mostly made
but it was
in Mexico.
And it was like one of the most American cars you could think of, right?
Yeah, and it's the most internationally built. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, you got some more good news?
Yeah, some more positive news. Spirit announced daily service from Memphis to Orlando, Las Vegas, and Los Angeles starting in April. Lufthansa is starting Frankfurt-St. Louis. Drew, this is huge. This is their first transatlantic continental Europe flight in 20 years since TWA shut down. And Munich to San Diego for summer 2022.
Also, I'll stop you right there.
Yeah.
Just for one moment. So when I was growing up, St. Louis was a huge European hub for TWA. They were flying Elton 11s,
747s.
Yep. I have no idea how that goes from a European hub to zero, know, where they're excited about one flight to Europe.
Connectivity. A lot of that was connectivity. The TWA had a big connectivity hub. It's kind of like Memphis. Memphis had European flights from Northwest, and once Northwest shut the hub down, not to say there's not demand from Memphis, not to say there's not demand from St. Louis. St. Louis is a very populated city, but it doesn't have the, I think we've talked about Minneapolis in the past and
Detroit,
Detroit to Nagoya.
Tokyo. Is there like a huge Japanese population that lives in Detroit that we don't know about?
Connectivity. Yeah. And St. Louis doesn't have a lot of Fortune 500 companies based there. Not a lot of business traffic that needs these international routes. And leisure passengers, they're not going to pay the premium amount for a nonstop flight when they could just go to Chicago and then onward, or Dulles and onward, or JFK and onward. You kind of see the business side of that.
Well, and also, if you have loyalty with an airline, you don't mind changing planes to stay on that airline, even if there's a nonstop from your city.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's funny, though, because I've been going on airliners.net, which is a great spotting website since I was like 10 years old, like since we got the internet growing up. And there are posts like forums that you can go on. And one of my favorite posts to read over the last 20 years is this wild speculation of all the people on airliners.net about what the next US cities are to get transatlantic service. And of course you have all these loyalists from those cities, like the St. Louis people are saying, oh, Icelandair is going to come here. WOW is going to come here.
Right.
Norwegian is going to send 7-8s here. And it's kind of cool now to actually see, like, I have no stake in St. Louis. I've been there. It's a nice city, but after reading this for like 20 years after TWA left, I was kind of rooting for St. Louis. And when I saw this announcement, a little part of me was like, yes, good for St. Louis. Finally. Yeah. Like I'm excited for them, and I have no skin in the game, but good for St. Louis. It's exciting to see, especially in this COVID era.
Yeah. I bet you they'll fly an A350. Does Lufthansa, I'm trying to think if they have a similar airplane.
350 might be overkill. I bet it'll be a 330.
330, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's their version of the 787-8, you know, for a new route. Yeah. Did you talk about British Airways?
No, because we got off on another tangent. You can tell that we're tired. Also for next summer, British Airways is doing Heathrow to Portland, and American is doing Charlotte to Rome, and then Finnair announced Helsinki to Dallas. And I just saw today another route announcement. Raleigh is getting Icelandair. Raleigh Durham.
Oh wow!
Is getting Icelandair.
Oh, Drew, that's crazy.
3 years ago, would we have maybe gotten excited about these routes? Probably not. But in this COVID era, after all the cutbacks, this is great to see.
Yeah. So British Airways, London to Portland and London to Pittsburgh. That's a new one that I didn't have on here. So London to Pittsburgh. They have their secret weapon, Doug, which is 787-8. It's only just over 200 seats. It's perfect for these new markets. You don't have to fill a lot of seats. So it's a good way to put something out there, see what the market is without, you know, a lot of empty seats.
Yeah.
Finnair, they're interesting, Doug. It's almost like, you know how Qatar Airways, every few months, they're flying to someplace that you didn't think that they could make work. But somehow they do.
Yeah.
To me, that's Finnair. And you talked about connectivity.
Yeah.
They're making Helsinki like a Middle Eastern hub, basically.
Yeah.
You know, right?
I mean, Helsinki to Dallas makes a little bit of sense because it's one world to one world connection, because both American and Finnair are part of the One World Alliance.
Yeah.
I read somewhere, and we'll have to get the actual news story on this or the background. But I read somewhere that Helsinki is actually the best positioned hub in Eurasia for Europe to Asia connections. If you look at the Great Circle route, you know, Emirates and Qatar and Etihad steal a lot of that traffic down through the Gulf. A lot of people go through Amsterdam, Frankfurt, London, places like that. But in Europe, going from Europe to Asia, if you're not flying nonstop from, say, Frankfurt to Tokyo, if you're flying from, let's say, I don't know, Shannon, Ireland to Tokyo, Helsinki is the most, what's the word I'm looking for?
Convenient or
it is the most efficient from a distance standpoint route, which is why Helsinki Finnair is actually taking advantage of this.
Yeah, I also think that they're trying to get some of the traffic that's going from the East Coast to Asia, if you can believe, because you wouldn't think about that going through Europe, but from say New York to Helsinki to Tokyo or New York to Helsinki to Singapore. It might really not be a bad option. It might be a couple hours more, but if they're offering a great product and a good deal. And, you know, Finnair, two of our friends were flying Finnair the same time, just coincidentally. So they're getting business, and they were both flying from the West Coast.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Finnair, keep an eye on there. They have a great product on the A350. All right, I keep adding stuff, but there's new routes popping up left and right. Well, I didn't talk about this, but
go ahead. Before you do that, I was about to say, this is the time of the year, that season where we get all these summer ads, Drew, that this part of the story, I have a feeling we're going to keep talking about for the next month or two as all these airlines start to add routes.
You know, let's do that. Let's have a route section where we talk about, all right, what are the new routes this week, Doug?
Yeah.
You know? Something that just came out, I think yesterday, JetBlue going to Canada for the first time. So from Kennedy and Boston to Vancouver.
Interesting. So JetBlue is beating Southwest to Canada.
Yeah, they are. Don't give Southwest ideas.
Yeah.
They won't be left behind.
Hopefully someone is listening to this. But yeah, no, that's a great idea that we'll have to do this topic. Maybe not every week, but every couple weeks we can talk about the new routes, a new route segment. Christmas is quickly approaching. It's going to be here and gone before we know it, Drew. And first of all, Merry Christmas to everyone of our listeners who celebrates Christmas, because by the time this episode airs, Drew, you and I are going to do another recording before Christmas, but we won't have another one after this that airs. So happy holidays, Merry Christmas to everyone.
Yep.
Drew, we wanted to give the listeners ways to make it seem like Christmas year round with airline and hotel perks that they can find anytime with a little work. We talk a lot about lounge hopping, flying premium cabins, and staying in nice hotels. You would think that we're rich, but we definitely are far from that. We're not at all. We're just good at finding these deals and taking advantage of airline and hotel offers.
Doug, it's all about taking our av geeking to the next level with these perks, right? Because we love to fly. If we can do a few things and get a nicer flight, that's what we do. And we love looking for these deals. So when I say a little work, it's not really work. It's actually fun.
It's fun.
It's a game for us to find these deals. And we love it. So why fly a domestic wide body in economy when for a few bucks more, you could get a nicer seat and possibly a meal, which is what we did, right? From San Francisco to New York. I think it was like, what was it? Like $20, $30 more. It was like hardly anything.
Yeah.
Doug, in your last job, you would be on a business trip sitting in first class with your coworkers while your coworkers walk back to economy. How did you do that? And can you tell us other ways to travel better for not much more money?
Yeah, I've got some notes that I'm going to talk about. One of the notes that I wrote down though is regarding those upgrades. During COVID, I got them a lot just because not a lot of business travelers were traveling, and I was traveling quite a bit, had really good status with Delta, and I got the upgrades a lot. Pre-COVID, it wasn't as much as I got during COVID. And now my dad, who is even one level higher than I am, he's a diamond now, which is above where I was at platinum. He's not getting them all the time either. So the days of the automatic upgrades, those are few and far between. I can tell you, if you travel enough, status is, even if you don't get the upgrade, status is a nice thing to have for a couple of reasons. First of all, when there's ear ops, when something goes wrong, and talking to you, someone who works at the airport, who are some of the first passengers that you look to reaccommodate? Not saying that not everyone is important,
No, I mean, what we'll do, just to give you an example, for our high flyers, the one people have 100,000 miles or whatever, flight cancels, we take them to a separate area. So they'll get rebooked faster.
Yeah.
You know, on whatever they want that has seats on.
Exactly. Marissa and I were flying through Cincinnati back to Philly several years ago in the middle of a blizzard, and our flight to Philly canceled, and they put us on a flight to Newark that was like 2 or 3 hours delayed and was about to close up. And they said, if you guys can run, you have seats on that flight. Go. And it was because of our elite status, or my elite status. If not, they probably would have said, well, you'll have to get a hotel and we'll book you on the first flight in the morning. But the gate agent was able to make it work and said, thank you for your loyalty. Here are your boarding passes. Go to this gate. Go now. They're waiting for you. They're about to close up. So you can get the status that way. Now, how do I get the status? That's a great question. Flying, first of all, you have to do what are called button seat miles. The airlines don't call them that, but all the elite flyers do. That means you have to get these thresholds. So like for the lowest elite threshold at most airlines, it's between 20 and 20,000 miles a year, like actually flying on the airplane. Seems like a lot.
That's a lot. Wait, stop. That is 10 transcon round trips.
Yeah.
Who flies that much?
Well, you know? So how do you bank some of those miles or cheat in a way? I guess I could say not really cheating, like you're not cheating the system, but how do you get some
extra, how do you maximize
I go back to EarOps. Drew, we've talked about some of those trips, like the time I was flying from Vegas to Sacramento through Los Angeles and my flight canceled, and I rebooked Las Vegas, LA, San Francisco, Salt Lake, Sacramento.
Okay,
well, a lot of people would say that sounds miserable. Why take 4 flights when you could take 2? Because I got those miles. Because the ticket was already paid for. I didn't have to pay extra for that flight. And that more than doubled the amount of miles that I had toward my status for the next year. And I got in at the same time, because it would have been a 7-hour wait sitting in Los Angeles for the next flight that was available.
Okay.
And I landed in Sacramento at the same time. Yeah, it was 2 extra flights, but those 2 extra flights, I got upgraded to first class because I was elite, and I got the extra miles for qualification. Another thing, and here's a disclaimer. We're not a CPA, a personal financial planner here. Real quick disclaimer with what we're about to say. Uh-huh. Credit card spend. We both have credit cards. And what I will say about credit cards is if you do the credit card game, if you get credit cards for points and miles, pay it off every single month. If you don't think that you can... don't get them.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. A lot of these cards come with great perks, but if you don't pay them off, cancel the card. Don't have credit cards if you can't do it. So that's our disclaimer.
Yeah, don't ever pay interest, because you take advantage of these deals. The credit card companies are paying you, but they are counting on you not paying your balance. Mm-hmm. That's how they cash in.
Exactly. So that's how I would get extra qualification miles too every year. Marissa and I would put all of our spend on our Delta card, which got us a huge bump in elite qualification miles. I was platinum, which is 75,000 miles a year, and I was flying about 35, maybe 40.
Okay, so how'd you get the extra miles?
By spend. When you hit when you hit a certain threshold, they'll pitch a bunch of extra elite qualification miles into your account throughout the year.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, from a hotel standpoint, I would say a lot of people. I actually read someone recently, one of the travel bloggers, say, "Don't chase elite status. Be your own elite." Meaning, if you want a suite upgrade, just pay for it. Don't chase the status hoping that you're going to get it. But here's what I would say about hotel elite status. Over the weekend, I had a trip that ended late on Saturday, and I left on another trip late on Sunday, and I paid for my own hotel to stay in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. The airline didn't pay for it. To me, it didn't make sense to drive home, pay the tolls, pay the gas, just to drive back the next day. I needed to get a late checkout, and I requested 4 o'clock. Because I'm an elite, I got a guaranteed 4 o'clock late checkout. When you were at the Hyatt at San Francisco last month and you wanted the late checkout, they were going to make you pay $50 for it or something.
Yeah, ridiculous.
When I was in Vail.
I have no status.
Yeah, when Marissa and I were in Vail a couple years ago, they waived our $50 resort fee and our $30 overnight parking for the whole time we were there because I was elite. If I wasn't elite, we would have paid $80 a day on top of the room rate for the resort credit or the resort fee, which is like free bikes and use of the pool and whatever, and $30 of parking. They said, thank you for your titanium status. We're waiving all of this. So that's a benefit there too.
Okay. So when your coworkers are walking back into economy, it's probably because they weren't as strategic as you to stay with the same carrier and use the little perks to raise your status. Mm-hmm. But Doug, I was with Ian, who's like you used to be, you're not going to be so much that guy anymore.
No, I'm going to be my own. I'm going to be my own elite now. Meaning I'm going to lose status definitely with the airline, right. Probably not with the hotel, with the hotel. Cause I have a lifetime status with Marriott now.
Mm-hmm.
So I won't lose that. I'll be my own elite from an airline standpoint, meaning when you and I fly together, if there's a good deal that pops up, because I won't get upgraded, we'll pay for the upgrade.
Just pay for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so this demographic, it's usually guys that are like our age, right? And it's all guys. So for the listeners, if there's any gals out there that you're a mileage runner, that you are looking for deals, please send us an email or get in touch with us, because we want to hear from you. Because it just seems like, it almost seems like big fish stories, like everyone's stories about all their perks, right?
Yeah, we're sitting around drinking beers with the fellas, talking about, I flew first class here. Yeah.
Right. And I'm friends with you, and a lot of our AvGeek friends are frequent flyers, like Steve Tao and Russ in San Francisco. Yeah. Yeah, there's these like, it's almost like they're more proud about that than their jobs. You know, the fact that they made 1K or they made gold medallion chain or whatever. So I'm a lowly, I have no status with anyone because I'm a non-rev. I don't pay for tickets. Mm-hmm. Usually I'm flying for free, right? And a lot of times I'll get first class for free, which is great. That's a perk that my company offers, and I appreciate that. But I also want the niceties that you have too, like the little perks, right? And for airline employees or someone who doesn't fly a lot, this is how you can do it. So you can get these credit cards that give you automatic status. We don't make money. No one sponsors us, but there's one credit card. It's silver. You know, it's like metallic a little bit if you want to figure out which card that is.
Is it silver?
You get that.
Is it silver or is it platinum color? I think it's
like a silvery platinum, if you will.
Platinum color. Yeah.
So you get that, and it costs like, it's $695 a year now. It used to be $550. But honestly, with all the perks that you get with it, I'm making money off that card. And I just want to give you just one example. And it was this trip to Vegas. So they give you this $200 travel credit if you stay at one of these luxury chain hotels. So I think their feeling is the hotel is so expensive, they don't mind giving you $200 back because they're going to make so much money. But you can be strategic. So what you do is you pick up one of these luxury hotels midweek in Las Vegas where no one goes. Stayed at a really nice, it was a Conrad hotel in Vegas, which is like an upper level Hilton. It was $78 a night, Doug. So spent two nights. When you stay at these hotels, they also give you $100, $125 food credit. And with this card, I'm automatically a gold. So you get free breakfast for 2 days. Mm-hmm. So just calculating this all out, they were paying me $100 to go to Vegas. Mm-hmm. You can do this. And, you know, there's so many other perks that annual fee goes away really quick. Other cards.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Before you move on.
Yes.
Did you do the same thing that you did when you and I were in Vegas back in March, where you went to Starbucks and you grabbed a bag and you just took your arms and you're like, wait, I still have $50. I'll take this granola bar. I'll take this granola bar.
Right.
Here, give this chocolate to Poppy when you get home.
Oh, yeah. So that was hotel. So Doug and I were getting free breakfast and it was like $60 value, but it was like 6 a.m. and nothing was open. So I'm never going to let any credit just slip away. What do? We went to Starbucks and treated it like a grocery store. And like, what do we do with all these croissants? The other thing is, so that's one credit card. I keep that permanently because that gives me status with Marriott and
Hilton.
And Hilton. Mm-hmm. Normally, you'd have to stay 25 nights. But just like you said, with that status, I can check in early, check out late. And just that breakfast alone, I mean, that's easily for two people at a nice hotel. That's easily worth like $40, right? All right, something else. So the other thing that I do is every year, I will get one or two of these credit card offers. Look for when they have a deal for 80,000 miles or 100,000, and they'll come around. Look for the ones where the annual fee is waived. Usually the annual fee is like $95. So a lot of times they're waived. You have to get that bonus, you normally have to spend about $4,000 in 3 months. you just put all your spend on that card, mm-hmm. and if you're about to make a big purchase, that's a good time to get one of these cards so you can reach that spend. And then the other thing, if they want you to spend $3,000 and you've only spent $2,500, just go buy a gift card where you normally shop.
Sometimes that doesn't work, though. Sometimes they don't honor the gift card purchase. So what I've done in the past is, if I know that we need to stock up on like canned goods and non-perishable foods or a Costco run for something, we'll just get a bunch of toilet paper to get over that threshold and say, well, we don't need to buy toilet paper for the next 6 months because we just bought it to get over that threshold. So
You could do that. The other thing you can do is pay your cable bill for the whole year. Mm-hmm. Like if you have any utilities that you have to pay, just pay it all up front and then you'll reach that spend. So that's my spiel. But I want to come back to what Doug started off with. Don't do this if you're not going to pay the balance every month. And don't do this if you cannot. You have to use it like it's cash. Mm-hmm. So when I use these credit cards, I just think like I'm paying from my debit card.
Yeah.
Because if you think credit card, you're more likely to spend more than you would normally. And we don't want any of you guys to go into debt, you know, to get some airline perk.
Yeah. Well, and if if you're about to buy a new car or a new house or refinance, I would say wait, mm-hmm. don't do it, because it will be a small hit on your credit score by taking out.
It'll be 5 points. It's like 5 points another card. Card.
Yeah, because it brings your length of credit down. It brings your actually brings your open accounts up, which helps, but it's the length of credit and the requests for credit. Again, we're not financial planners. We could spend an entire episode talking about that, especially me as an MBA. Like this is kind of my jam. This is where my degree and my passion meets. Yeah. The financial and the aviation piece.
I got one more perk.
Okay.
I have one more scheme or strategy to get marry an airline employee or even better, become one. Yep. And the whole world opens up to you. Of course, there has to be seats available, right? But if you plan it well, like I went to Las Vegas midweek, I had no problems getting there and back. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, most airlines will offer you a discount to buy a revenue ticket. So mm-hmm. you get revenue tickets for less too.
Yeah. Well, also,
anything else?
Well, with the hotel card, like when you and I went to Myrtle Beach, I had I didn't second guess myself dropping a pretty decent amount of points for that beachfront room because I have mm-hmm. so many points because we just put all the spend on the card because I was getting all those points when I was traveling. And I was like, well, hey, we just flew in first class to a beach destination for free. Yeah, I don't mind spending probably a little bit more than what that hotel should have been. But it was, you mm-hmm. know, it was nice. It was beachfront. We had a balcony. It was great, you know, and I didn't second guess that because that's what the points are there for, is to use them for fun things like that.
Yeah. Oh, one thing I forgot, Doug. So before you get one of these 80,000, 100,000 credit card offers, before you hit enter, don't do it. Call one of your friends. Like I'll usually call mm-hmm. Doug and say, hey, do you have one of these cards? Because if you do, send me a referral, because then you get 15,000 miles. Mm-hmm. Or points, right? You get a referral bonus and I still get the same. And then I would just say, Doug, you owe me dinner or something, a really expensive dinner. $15,000 on 15,000 miles. With that, once again, Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate. We just want to thank you, everyone. This is your show. So go on our website, nexttripnetwork.com, and let us know what's on your mind so we can talk about it or give us your feedback. You can also follow us on Twitter or Instagram at Next Trip Podcast. Please tell your friends about us so we can reach more people who love aviation and travel.
Thanks to all of our listeners for your support and for joining the conversation. We'll see you next week. And in the meantime, stay aviation tough.
This has been the Next Trip Podcast. Visit nexttripnetwork.com for information about previous episodes, trip reviews, aviation photos, and other aviation-related content. This is your show, so search for The Next Trip on Twitter and let Doug and Drew know what you want to talk about. Not on Twitter? You can also email them at nexttrip.podcast@gmail.com. Please consider leaving a review wherever you download your podcasts. It will help other listeners like you discover this show.